when we, for a moment in time, can call forth a different self. Superman created Clark Kent so that society would accept him, so he could walk around unnoticed and never consider himself above everyone else. I created Richard so I could move away from my insecurities, launch my business, and better serve the people I wanted. Beyoncé created Sasha Fierce to explore her creative side and experiment with her art form. I hope this starts to peel back the proverbial onion on why an alter ego becomes such an effective agent of change. When you become more intentional about what characteristics will show up on an important field of play for you, you'll activate a creative energy powering a new level of performance. If Ian had recognized that just one field of play doesn't define him as a person, he could have avoided the emotional outbursts, frustration, and mental grenades going off in his head. The ordinary and extraordinary world. I'm going to reinforce this point throughout the audiobook because I don't want you to get a sugary sweet taste in your mouth. You're not a terrible human being if some area of your life is average. You won't put this book down and become Batman, Black Widow, or Black Panther in every single area of your life. Frankly, I'd kick my own ass if that was the book I wrote. Instead, treat this idea like a compass, orientating you to one stage. Find one field of play, and let's look at creating something extraordinary there. It'll make this process far simpler, far more accessible, and a hell of a lot easier to implement. In this section, I want to simply give you the landscape of what's happening in what is called the ordinary world and the extraordinary world inside the field of play model and prepare you for the journey ahead. The terms ordinary and extraordinary are in essence metaphors we use to orient you to the common experience you'll have when you shift your mindset. Also, the short and long-term effects of your orientation will affect your level of confidence to face the challenges ahead. There's also research to support the positive effects of this shift in mindset. Researchers have found that self-suppressive activation and self-expansive activation are keys to opening the vault to more confidence and courage. In the research and work we've done, we refer to it as the OW mindset and the WOW mindset. Suppressing the OW mindset means your intentions and actions are motivated by negative emotions. You're trying to prevent bad things from happening. Whether they're thoughts, feelings, or experiences, you're suppressing to avoid perceived pain, the OW mindset. If you approach any activity to avoid a challenge, it's a form of suppression. When you set the orientation, like a compass, to negative motivation and do something to avoid some pain or avoid something altogether, it makes it more difficult to see yourself as the person who can solve your own problems. This suppressive cycle of avoiding who you are and who you want to be creates a trapped self. Self-expansive activation, on the other hand, and what we refer to as the WOW mindset, is when your intentions are motivated by a positive or growth mindset. You're trying to activate or gain something more in life, whether it's positive thoughts, emotions, or experiences. Setting the orientation to positive emotion and being motivated to create something positive in your life over the long term, habitually and as a routine, enhances your self-efficacy. It builds your confidence, courage, and sense of control over your ability to face life's challenges. It creates a heroic self. Becoming clear about your intentions, identifying the benefits you get from an activity, and determining what you want to achieve on a field of play is what will help unlock your heroic self. Easier said than done, right? That's why we use alter egos and secret identities. They help us suspend any disbelief and leverage the power of aligning with someone or something else's strengths, capabilities, and superpowers. So, to help you see how this plays out in the alter ego effect, there are two worlds we've created. We live in a world of opposites, up, down, hot, cold, outside, inside, light, dark, and on and on. The separation is there to delineate the worlds we can choose to live in, the ordinary and the extraordinary world. Each of these creates two totally different experiences. Neither is devoid of challenge, but both create a useful view of what happens when we choose to suppress or expand our core self. We're going to be expanding on these more in the coming chapters as we build out your alter ego. But you can see that the separation of these two worlds has created another zone at the center of the core self. In the ordinary world, you can find a trapped self. And in the extraordinary world, you can find a heroic self. Both of these represent the typical experience someone feels depending on how they're approaching and experiencing a field of play. This is why we call it the alter ego effect. It creates a completely new result or outcome. If you imagine standing at the center of this field of play model, and you turn to face the ordinary world, the common thoughts, emotions, and experiences you have as you move through each of those layers suppresses your core self, and you end up feeling trapped. How? As with any good story, if there is a hero, there is also an enemy lurking in the shadows. And because your orientation has been set to negative or pain, the enemy feeds off it and fills you with doubt, worry, self-judgment, avoidance, and fear. All of this can cause you to not show up on a particular field of play like you're capable of, and in some cases, not show up at all. Basically, you completely avoid the field, or you avoid letting all of your abilities shine. The reason is that you've been hit with the powerful hidden forces the enemy deploys to keep you trapped. The enemy uses all the layers to challenge you. It tells you things like, at the core driver's layer, you're not meant for that. After all, nobody from your family has ever done that before. At the belief layer, you don't believe in yourself because if you just take a look at your past, you've quit on a lot of things. The action layer, you don't have the skills or knowledge, so you should probably just wait until you do more research, work on it more, and finally get it perfect. At the field of play layer, you don't want to make a fool of yourself. Are you sure you want to take such a huge risk? I'd hate for everyone to see what happens if you fail. The common experience in the ordinary world is this sense that it's not you running the show. It's this feeling like the real you is trapped by some negative story, belief, or circumstance you can't find a way to overcome. But the enemy is a wily little bugger, and it's always waiting anytime it senses just a bit of trepidation, negative motivation, and lack of clear intent on who is going to show up on a field of play. The ordinary world can be summed up with two words, destructive and uninspired. It's destructive to our core self and uninspired through our results. So it's important to realize that this trapped self, which most people feel is who they are, isn't you. The core self has resources available to activate a different side of you, the heroic self, with the help of an alter ego. So, is everything in the extraordinary world all sunshine and rainbows? If you go back to the center of the field of play model, and you turn to face the extraordinary world, the common thoughts, emotions, and experiences you have as you move through each of those layers expand your core self, and you end up feeling heroic. How? In the extraordinary world, your orientation has been set to positive. The enemy has a harder time stopping you with its arrows of doubt, temptation, anger, ego, and fear because you build an alter ego using all the layers to bring a powerful set of characteristics or superpowers onto a specific field of play. You activate this creative force from your core self to show up like you want to. And you say things like, at the core driver's layer, I'm doing this for my family. I'm doing this for a greater cause. I'm doing this to show others in my tribe what can be done. I'm doing this to honor the people who came before me. At the belief layer, I am a powerful force for change. I love the challenge. I can't wait to see what happens. At the action layer, I may not know everything, but I'll give it my best. I have this incredible power to focus on what's important. I'm extremely calm in high-pressure situations. At the field of play layer, failure is a block I turn into a stepping stone. I've got so many allies waiting to help me. The extraordinary world is extraordinary because we tackle life head on, we challenge it, and we don't let distractions slow us down. It also allows you to suspend disbelief about your capabilities because you're taking an alter ego onto the field of play. And this alter ego, just like Beyoncé's Sasha Fierce, protects your core self from the tools the enemy uses to stop you. Plus, it turns out there's research to back up the power of intentionally bringing predefined superpowers to your world. Martin Seligman and Christopher Peterson are two of the most widely cited researchers of happiness and well-being. Over the period of a decade, they studied almost 100 cultures around the globe. The team tested 150,000 people to determine how people that were coping with adversity and the challenges of life operated. They found that the people who identified their core characteristics, or superpowers, and deliberately and intentionally focused on activating those superpowers were more resilient and fulfilled. We'll be digging into uncovering those superpowers your alter ego will activate throughout the audiobook. The imagination game. You and I have this incredibly powerful ability to create worlds in the mind with our imagination. Most people are unfortunately using their imaginations to play out scenarios that look like horror stories. It causes them to retract and move away from their goals. But if I ask them to imagine themselves showing up in that same scenario as Wonder Woman, Mother Teresa, or Princess Leia, they could imagine a very different result. For the guys, you can imagine yourself as Superman, Nelson Mandela, or Yoda. But if you want to be Wonder Woman, I won't judge. Let's play a quick imagination game. Scenario. You have to give a speech to 1,000 of your peers in a huge auditorium. How would you perform? Would you be nervous? What would your body language look like? How would you sound to others? Now imagine yourself going on stage as Wonder Woman or Superman. How would you act, look, and sound now? What about as Mother Teresa or Nelson Mandela or Princess Leia or Yoda? Now here's one of the most important points of the book, so pay close attention. From an observer's perspective, who is the real you? Be careful how you answer, because this is the paradox that has tripped up most people in their lives. It's also how many people in the amateur self-help world have led people astray for decades. To help you with your answer, think of it this way. We are judged in our lives by what we do, not by what we think or intend to do. If I think about calling my mom and telling her exactly why I love her, and I actually pick up the phone and call and tell her, it creates a totally different world. One is ordinary, the other extraordinary. If you show up for a speech incredibly nervous, but everyone in the audience experiences you as being confident, articulate, and funny, does it really matter to them if you showed up as an alter ego in order to give them that experience and yourself the reward? No. At the end of the day, I care about how people perform. When I first started my business, I wanted to be a confident, decisive, and articulate professional who could help athletes get better results on their fields of play by improving their mental toughness. The problem? That person wasn't showing up. I was trapped by one of the hidden forces the enemy likes to use to snuff out action taking. Worrying about what other people would think of me. People weren't going to respect me or listen to me because I looked so young. Those doubts, worries, and fears rattling around inside my head got in the way. But when I slipped on a pair of glasses, my alter ego stepped forth, activating the specific traits, skills, and beliefs I wanted so I could perform. They were there all along, and Richard stepped in to make them happen. This isn't being fake. Pretending to know about particle physics when you don't is fake. Using an alter ego to entertain a group of physics students when you've been a boring physics professor until now is just bringing the right tools for the job. One of my favorite parts about the feedback I get from clients and people is the sense of amazement people have about the depth and breadth of their abilities. This is the classic case of it's hard to read the label when you're inside the bottle. Michael Shurtleff, a Broadway and Hollywood casting director in the 1960s and 1970s, said that acting, contrary to what many people believed, is about tapping into what already exists inside. Most people go into acting to get out of themselves, to get away from their everyday humdrum selves, and become someone else who is glamorous, romantic, unusual, different. And what does acting turn out to be? Using your own self. Working from what's inside you. Not being someone else, but being you in different situations and contexts. Not escaping you, but using yourself naked and exposed up there on the stage or silver screen. Daniel Craig isn't James Bond, but James Bond is somewhere inside Daniel Craig. Most of my clients say the alter ego feels more like their truest self. I'll let you judge that for yourself later. My good friend Ian says the alter ego is your deepest self, the truest version of you. This was Joanne's experience too. Joanne, who is trained in cognitive behavioral therapy and transactional analysis, began her career working for yacht brokers before working in sales and marketing on the technology side for British Airways in London. A self-described introvert by nature, she had a side that would come out at the office that she never quite understood. I had experiences early in my career, like getting blocked for a promotion after I landed a huge global deal, and after handling accounts worth millions of dollars, that made me realize I had to take charge of my career. I had to go out there and get my career myself. I wasn't going to leave it in anyone else's destiny. Joanne knew she needed to show up differently in her job if she was to succeed. Working in a largely male-dominated world, Joanne began to switch into a strong, bold, decisive woman in meetings with her peers and boss. When Joanne first heard me talk about the alter ego, it was like everything clicked for her. When I heard you talk about it, I thought, that's Giovanna. I'm part Italian, and when I go into certain work settings, I switch from being the quiet girl who sits in the background into this other persona that has no hang-ups. Where I may normally worry about what someone thinks of me, Giovanna doesn't think any of that. All along, Giovanna has shielded and protected me and helped me to go places I've always dreamed of. When we talked about the concept of protection, she explained that when she was in a toxic environment where people did and said unsavory things, having her alter ego helped her realize it was other people and their issues, not me. I could walk away from the circumstances and the people. You'd walk away from something someone said or did in the boardroom thinking, this is terrible, but Giovanna could take it. As Giovanna, I stood up for myself. As Giovanna, I can come across as fierce and powerful and scary when I needed to. Joanne's alter ego was helping her stay rooted in her true sense of core self, without succumbing to the poisonous whispers of the enemy. I used to worry that I was too harsh with someone, but I wouldn't be where I am if I didn't allow my alter ego to take charge and be fierce. There's no place in business if you're not able to step up for yourself and be fierce when you need to be. Using her alter ego of Giovanna helped Joanne to show up as the best version of herself so she could accomplish her work goals. Over the last 2 years, I've realized that the alter ego is actually who I am, and ultimately, who I'd love to continue being. Like Ian, Beyonce, and Joanne, your alter ego is really about defining how you want to show up, defining the superpowers, and borrowing the characteristics of an existing person, character, superhero, animal, or whatever to help activate your heroic self. You get to define who shows up on the field of play. The layers that make up your experience of life are fluid, and as I walk you through building your alter ego, you'll get to create the outcome. Which will end up being the most real, most true version of your core self? Over the years, psychologists have noticed the benefits of using the alter ego concept too. Psychologist Oliver James chronicles how the late entertainer David Bowie created a number of alter egos, including Ziggy Stardust, to achieve his ambition of rock stardom and to overcome an abusive, damaging childhood. James even makes the case that Bowie achieved success and became an emotionally healthy man because he created these personas. The key was the therapeutic use he had made of personas to develop authentic selves. Even David Bowie was actually a persona, as the famous entertainer was born David Jones. The idea of different personas wasn't confined to only a select few or only to elite performers like Bowie. As James explains, working as a therapist, I have not met a single client who does not have several or numerous different selves. James even advocates that all of us can use different personas to achieve our goals too. Just like David Jones used David Bowie and Ziggy Stardust to achieve his, understanding the different parts of yourself better, identifying them and their origins, and then being much more self-conscious about which person you choose to be in different settings. That's all we're doing with the alter ego. We're consciously and intentionally choosing to bring the best version of ourselves forward for the different roles we play in life. You may already be doing this. I've coached, taught, and presented on the alter ego effect for almost 2 decades. After I explain the concept to people, just about everyone tells me they've used an alter ego or aspects of one without realizing it. That's what happened to Kisma, the founder of a coaching and training company. When she first learned about the alter ego effect, she realized that she'd used a variation of it in her previous life as a professional musician. Playing in professional orchestras, there's a certain level of nerves I would feel before solos. I played the flute and performed a number of concertos, and I had to get into a different mindset. As I would walk across the stage preparing myself for the concerto, I would think, who do I want to channel? Who do I want to be like? Sometimes it was Yo-Yo Ma. Other times it was Emmanuel Pahoud. Whoever I chose, it was like an instant drop-in, as I told myself that I would pull from them. Without knowing it, Kisma was leveraging some elements of the alter ego effect to show up on her field of play and appear during her moments of impact, her solos. But she didn't realize she could use it in other aspects of her life, especially her business, until we met. A lot of people are like Kisma, maybe even you. They've intuitively tapped into their imagination and created an alter ego. They just haven't used it to its fullest extent and intentionally, but they recognize its form. It's familiar to them. They just didn't have a name for it or a process. Now it's time to choose your adventure, because just as there are many ways to get to the center of town, the alter ego effect has many doorways you can enter and walk through. Chapter 4. Your Ordinary World. There's no way to describe it other than I felt trapped. Every morning, I had the intention of sitting down at my kitchen table to write, but it was like the chair and my butt were magnets that repelled each other. The resistance was incredible, and I felt like I was trapped in this purgatory of wanting to create something, but not having the power to overcome the resistance. I sat in my airplane seat listening to a well-known author recount what it was like to struggle to pursue his lifelong dream. The funny thing about being in my line of work is that it opens people up to sharing their challenges in life. It always makes for great conversations, especially with people who found a way to overcome those challenges. He went on to tell me that even when he did sit down to write, he'd stare at the blinking cursor on his computer screen, and with every flash of the cursor, imagine it was saying, "You can't do this. You can't do this. You can't do this." It haunted me every time. He also had a small globe sitting on a shelf nearby that he'd stare at blankly. He said, "I'd stare at that thing for an eternity and get lost in the endless spiral of self-talk that I wasn't cut out to write, or whatever words I typed out were going to be rubbish anyway. It was crushing to my soul." Before I finished the 30,000-foot conversation with the accomplished author, here's what I knew. He wasn't a special snowflake. His experience wasn't particularly unique. I've spoken to car enthusiasts who wanted to rebuild and restore a car from scratch, spent years collecting magazines and ordering boxes of parts, and even planned a Saturday to start their project, only to walk into their garage, sit on a stool, and watch those boxes collect dust. I've heard stories from sales reps who started out driving their cars into vacant parking lots, reclining their seats to hide, and sitting there for hours because they were terrified of knocking on doors to sell their widget. One man even said, "When I put my finger on the electric recline button on my seat and flicked it back, it was like I was sinking into the quicksand of fear, and this heavy weight would start to build on my chest and get heavier and heavier the more I reclined. It was terrible." I've heard athletes tell me about the games they'd play and never attempt a shot because that was for, insert any name of a better player, to do, not me. I could go on and on with stories from artists, singers, actors, scientists, students, corporate professionals, traders, mothers, and entrepreneurs of how some force was stopping them from moving toward their goals or dreams. This is what is known as the ordinary world. It's a world where it feels like the real you is trapped. The you that has aspirations, dreams, and goals that aren't being actualized. They aren't getting out onto the field of play so you can see just how good you are or what you can do. It's frustrating, stressful, and typically creates a pile of self-judgment. It's also a very easy place to stay stuck because it's not life or death for most people. I mean, it's not like there's a saber-toothed tiger chasing you down and going to devour you. Unless you take action, right? It's an internal world you know about, filled with aspirations, hopes, dreams, goals, and visions of a better, different, or more evolved version of who you are today. It's not like you're a character on a movie screen and the whole audience knows these struggles exist. It's an easy place to stay trapped. There's an internal justification of, nobody will ever know anyway if I don't do this. But you will always know. Your ordinary world. By now, you might already be thinking about what your alter ego will be, or your superpower, or maybe just what problem you need solved. There's no one way to get started. Choose what's best for you. Start where you're comfortable. If you get stuck somewhere, skip to the next step. It's just that simple. For the book, I've laid out the chapters to begin by delving into the ordinary world first. Then I'll help you see the common and hidden forces the enemy likes to use to suppress and keep you trapped. I'll help you reveal what has influenced you in the past and what part of yourself has been showing up on your field of play and during your moment of impact. As you move through this chapter, you'll decide which field of play you'll focus on so you can enter the lab and create your first alter ego. Let's examine this idea of a field of play and uncover what's ordinary about it. Or possibly reveal those moments of impact on your field when you feel discouraged, frustrated, and disappointed because you're not showing up like you want or can, and maybe get trapped by any of the hidden forces. Now, we're not going to lay you down on a psychologist's sofa and unravel years and years of trauma because, frankly, it's not needed. The power of the alter ego effect is rooted in its simplicity and how fast you can apply it to get results. When I first start working with my clients or people I meet and ask them what problems, challenges, frustrations they're facing, they'll tell me things like, in sports, I'm not taking enough shots during the game. My coach is harder on me than my teammates. I'm in a slump and I don't know how to get out of it. I have a big tryout coming up and I need to perform at my best. I'm overthinking things too much on the field. In business, I'm launching a new business, but I'm struggling to get new customers. I can't find investors for my startup. I'm not sure what I should do next to grow my company. My staff is killing me. I'm fed up that my business isn't growing and I'm burnt out. Career? It's freaking painful that I can't finish my manuscript. I'm a nice person, and I like being a nice person, but in business, people are walking all over me. I'm tired of working so many hours and not getting recognized for my work. My entire industry is shifting, and the uncertainty is stressing me out. I hate walking the red carpet and doing the media tours. All I want to do is act. I could go on and on in the areas of finance, health and fitness, family, relationships, and personal time and well-being. But I'm sure you get the picture. Life is a challenge. Ask yourself, what is it about a particular area of your life that's frustrating you? What's making it ordinary? What don't you like about it? What's not working in it? What do you feel you're capable of doing that you're not? You know yourself better than anyone, and your ability to be honest and real with yourself here is going to set you up for a lot more success later in this audiobook. There's no need to beat yourself up, shame yourself, or judge harshly. Allow yourself to be objective and real. Your field of play. John is a beast, man. He's relentless and one of the most inspiring people I've ever met. This was the most common remark I heard from the employees of a client when I interviewed them about their boss back in 2011. John was a proud Italian Bronx kid who loved his mom's manicotti and said bro more than anyone I'd ever met. John had flown me into Houston to meet with his staff to help improve the performance and morale of his trading and brokerage company. Ever since the 2008 and 2009 financial meltdown, the company had taken a beating and he was struggling to keep the business profitable. He wanted my help to get his team running on all cylinders and clear up some head trash that had started to create a toxic environment. Over the course of a few days, I met with 35 different team members, from Sylvia, the diligent executive assistant, to Marcus, the stressed-out broker, and each of them would follow John into battle. After talking to all the team members over a few days, John and I sat in his meticulously decorated office with sports memorabilia, lining the walls and filling the shelves of his bookcases. We unpacked the events of the past few days and talked about the future. When John originally reached out to me, he had heard about me from an NBA client who was his friend. I'd helped a friend build out an alter ego, and John was interested in doing so too because he felt like he lost his edge. Now sitting there, months after we started working together, I asked him, "How's your alter ego working out for you?" "You should probably ask my wife and kids that question," he said and laughed. "So it's working?" "Bro, you have no idea. You nailed it. She's got a stack of cannolis waiting for you to take back to New York." Earlier I mentioned how we have different roles we play in life. Each of these roles, parent, spouse, business owner, leader, sister, son, corresponds to a field of play. You can pick any field of play that you want to build an alter ego for, and just like John, you might automatically default to thinking about your professional life, sport, or vocation. But in John's case, he discovered he didn't need any more help with his business. He already had a great work ethic and good attitude, and his current working persona was already a beast. His home life, though, was a completely different story. He'd grown up in a family where his dad was never around, and when he was around, he was either yelling at the kids or buried in his chair, ignoring everyone. John's home life was starting to mirror his father's, and he hated it. So instead of taking more of his energy and devoting it to his work, we diverted it to his home life field of play. John built out his alter ego to be like his best friend's dad back in New York growing up. Timmy's dad was always roughhousing with us, cracking jokes, threw the best neighborhood barbecues, and just flat out loved life. He was fun to be around. John found out through the process that the more he turned his attention to creating an inspiring home life, the more it transformed his work life, and his team loved him for it. I mentioned that his team called him a beast over and over again. Now here's the thing. They already had respect for his work ethic and business savvy, but they called him a beast and inspiring because of what he had become at home. As you work through this book, I'd encourage you to think about one field of play to build your alter ego for. Is it your personal life? Some people lead phenomenal professional lives, easily achieving success. But when you look at their personal lives, they are less than ideal. They have no idea how to connect or form intimate, loving, stable relationships with their significant others, family, friends, or kids. Although most of my work with clients starts in their professional worlds or athletic worlds, as with John, we often slip into their personal lives when they realize they want to be a better spouse or parent. Do you want an alter ego for your professional life? Some people lead awesome personal lives. They have loving, supportive relationships, but when it comes to achieving success professionally, they haven't made the impact they dream of. I recommend going with the field of play that's causing you the most frustration angst, or heartache. It's the one where building an alter ego is going to make a monumental impact on your life. By the way, there are two reasons I call it the field of play. The first one is the obvious reference to the sports world and the idea that there are chalk lines, borders, and a starting and end point to the activity happening on the field. This is to help you recognize that we carry ourselves into many different fields in our lives, many different stages and arenas, and each one demands a different set of skills, attitudes, and mindsets to be successful. It's one of the reasons why the alter ego effect is so powerful. You become truly intentional about who's ending up on that field. The second reason I use field of play is because of the final word, play. It's to remind you that you can have fun with this process. Life is already hard enough, and serious things or real struggles are a natural part of the unfolding of life. But that doesn't mean you can't take that same playful attitude you had when you were a kid and play with this concept and have fun with it. It's exactly what John did, and now it's your turn. The Little Shop Owner That Could. Mary Ann and her husband opened an automotive repair shop in 1999. Her biggest challenge was her customers. She had come from the banking world, so she understood the financial pillar of running a business. But when customers called and she was the one to answer, they didn't want to talk with her. They wanted to speak to a technician or owner. They wanted to speak to a man, not a woman. "I was frustrated with people," Mary Ann admits. "But when I stayed up one night and thought about it and asked, what am I really frustrated with? I realized it was myself and my inability to walk people through that process and help them." Mary Ann knew she was smart and competent, but she didn't sound like it on the phone. So of course people didn't want to speak to her. She set out to do two things. First, she had to go get the skills and knowledge she needed. Then second, she created an alter ego to help her show up the way she wanted during her moment of impact, the customer phone call. Before long, people were calling to specifically talk to her about their vehicle issues. And she especially made other women comfortable because they were being helped by a woman in an industry dominated by men. What's happening in your ordinary world may also be what's not happening. It could be what you're avoiding. Maybe you started a business, but you aren't out there getting the message out about your new products or services or making sales calls. Maybe you want to start a business, but you haven't. Maybe you want to ask for a raise or a promotion, but you haven't. It's the classic and often quoted quip from hockey legend Wayne Gretzky: you miss 100% of the shots you don't take. Maybe you have what I call focusitis, the inability to focus on one thing and get it finished, which leaves you with a lot of wasted effort and nothing to show for the blood, sweat, and tears. Whatever it might be, use this framework to get clear about your ordinary world so we can unleash your true performance capabilities. The Five Bridges to Progress. Quick question. Have you paid attention to the content or topic of the conversations you've had with people lately? I can guarantee they'll fall into one of the following five bridges. I refer to them as bridges because bridges are pathways to allow things to come in and out of an area. For you, these five bridges can either help or hurt the quality of your professional, athletic, or personal life. Stopping, starting, continuing, less of, more of. The vast majority of life's conversations when it comes to someone changing something is found in one of those five intentions or bridges. I want to stop smoking, stop eating unhealthy, stop drinking so much, stop going to bed so late, stop yelling at my kids, stop leaving things to the last minute. Or, I want to start eating more vegetables, start working out in the morning, start marketing my business more consistently, start having more fun, start spending evenings with my kids. Or, I want to continue working out. I want to continue my pregame routine. I want to continue engaging on social media for my business. I want to continue having weekly team meetings. Or, I want to watch less TV. I want to spend less time on social media. I want to feel less tired after lunch. I want to spend less time with that toxic group of people. Or, I want to read more good books. I want to go on more date nights with my wife. I want to hang out with friends more. I want to swim more. I want to laugh more. If you really started to pay attention to your life, you'd find these topics repeat themselves hourly. For the purposes of this exercise, and to help you uncover even more helpful material to work with on our quest, we're going to add one final filter to your five bridges. Thinking, feeling, doing, and experiencing. These are the four planes we're always living in. What are you thinking? What are you feeling? What are you doing? And what are you experiencing or getting as a result? In the context of your ordinary world and the field of play you've chosen, we're going to use the Five Bridges framework throughout the book to help you get clear about what's working and not working and power up your alter ego. Because we're specifically talking about the results or outcomes you'd like to change, we'll only be using two of the bridges to help define your ordinary world on the specific field of play you've chosen. Make a list for each category below and ask yourself, what do I want to stop experiencing or stop getting as a result or outcome? What do I want to experience less of, get less of? To make it easier for you, these results would all be things you could hear, see, taste, touch, or smell. For example, maybe you want to stop not seeing my creative work get out there, experience less incomplete work, stop seeing my sales numbers decline, hear fewer people complain about my cooking, painting, writing, or creative work, stop seeing my day wasted with social media, stop living where I'm at, lose less, stop hearing my coach criticize my poor performance, spend less, eat less, hear less rejection, make less bogeys as a golfer, take fewer penalties, spend less time on the bench, spend less time at home, stop seeing my to-do list grow, stop hearing my family criticize me or tell me to get motivated. To get more inspiration from others, go to altereegoeffect.com/tribe. When I'm working with a client, I have them do a huge data dump. Be free and honest while making this list. Don't try to censor or edit right now. The beauty of this exercise is that it gets you super clear on your ordinary world, the results, and the outcomes that you're currently experiencing. Once you have this list made, then you can star the biggest priorities. You may not be able to do everything. If you want an effective alter ego, you need to focus on one field of play. Get disciplined and focus on building a powerful alter ego that will change how you show up on your field of play. The great thing about the Five Bridges of Progress exercise is that it really allows you to reflect on the entirety of your field of play. It forces you to get real about how you're currently living, acting, feeling, and thinking in your ordinary world. But then it flips immediately into something positive. Instead of dwelling on what you want to stop or what isn't working, we're going to flip to what you do want and what you want to start experiencing. This is the extraordinary world. But we'll get to that in a few chapters. I often tell my clients, I don't care what your answers are, and I don't. Each of us chooses to live our lives. All I concern myself with is whether my clients' actions, thoughts, and emotions are aligned with what they really want. When we're aligned, that's when the magic happens. Most of us aren't aligned. We're fighting against an internal tension that is a deep desire to be living in an extraordinary world. If there's only something outside of us that would change, don't stay trapped by this thinking, because that's where the enemy lives. Just be honest with yourself. Being honest with yourself is how you'll find the emotional resonance, the driving force, the purpose that will fuel the alter ego. Finishing the conversation at 30,000 feet. As the famous author told me more about his backstory, I wrestled with a thought. Why was he so passionate about that globe? Well, I was about to get my answer. So how did you finally make the switch and defeat the resistance? I asked. He laughed and said, procrastination, oddly enough. Oh, really? Yes. I was sitting in my armchair reading a book about the famous French novelist, Victor Hugo, and something in his story struck me. It was the quote, "Nothing is more powerful than an idea whose time has come." It hit me like a book upside the head. I felt like he was speaking to me. So I got up from the chair, walked over to my shelf, grabbed the small globe, placed it on my desk, and rotated the country of France to face me, and I began to channel Victor Hugo. Victor became my writing alter ego. The words started to flow out of me because my time had come. So, do you have a clear picture in your head of your ordinary world? Do you know what's frustrating you? If you do, great, because your time has come to step into your extraordinary world. Chapter 5. Finding your moments of impact. We sat inside a boardroom with a wall of glass surrounding us, overlooking the concrete jungle of New York City, watching thousands of New Yorkers racing around far below. Sean and I were looking up at the landscape while he was pointing out the buildings across the city where he had clients. It was an impressive collection of tall skyscrapers. Sean is the head of cloud storage at a large technology company and works exclusively with the world's biggest banks and financial institutions. Sean and I met because I was mentoring his daughter, an elite soccer player. After he saw what we were implementing to help her perform more consistently, he wanted the same high-performance strategies for his own career. We walked back over to the big table and he sat down. I picked up a set of red, blue, and black markers and turned to the whiteboard to get to work. Today was the day we were going to map out a plan for his goal of being the number one sales producer in the company. No small feat, because he was working at a Fortune 50 organization. I asked him what a normal day looked like. He told me about client meetings, giving presentations, dinners, talking to people on the phone, and handling some administrative work. What are you paid to do? Like, what is your boss judging you on in your performance reviews? I wanted him to drill down and get hyper-specific on his performance. I wanted him to get crystal clear about what would truly move the needle on his career. I'm hired to grow the cloud computing market in New York City, specifically the financial market. Great. And how are you doing in the eyes of your bosses? I asked. Good. I hit my numbers. Is hitting your numbers what you want? No. I know I can be doing a lot more, and I'm leaving a lot in the tank. Okay. Well, let's look at your field of play and work backward from the ultimate goal of closing more deals and see if we can identify the things we need to change to make it happen. Target mapping. Target mapping is defining your final outcome or goal and then working backward from the target to build a strategy and plan to reach the goal. Others call it end in mind. Extremely successful people in any walk of life have a fantastic ability to think this way. If you ever find yourself feeling like you're walking a bit aimlessly, it's most likely because you haven't defined a destination, goal, or outcome, and you're just doing. Picking a target and then working backward helps you see all the important steps or stages you need to reach in order for that desired end result to happen. Want to wake up refreshed and rested at 6 every morning? Want to have $1 million in investments working for you in 10 years? Want to end a tournament with your hands raised, feeling victorious and ecstatic about your performance? Want to have a lean, fit, and healthy body you're proud of in 90 days? Want to show up at the airport 90 minutes before your flight? Then work backward to map out a plan with the steps that will ensure it happens. Does it mean you'll reach your goal with 100% certainty? Of course not. However, you've just increased the likelihood by a vast margin. Once I could help Sean get clear about his real purpose in the company, growing the cloud computing revenues in the financial market in New York City to a specific level, it would be easier to eliminate the distractions and focus his energy on the actions that matter. Working backward, we keyed in on the actions that would have a real impact on whether he grew the financial market in New York. The list we made included things like client meetings, calls reaching out to prospective clients, relationship building lunches, and presentations. These were the important activities on Sean's career field of play. If we were talking about his family, personal well-being, or sports fields of play, the activities would look different, obviously. But Sean was focused on creating excellence in this part of his career, so that's where we focused. We broke down these activities and looked closely at his performance on the field of play. These are what I refer to as moments of impact. They're the actions, opportunities, events, situations, or expectations with the greatest impact on your success. Moments of impact are filled with the most resistance, most emotion, and most challenge because they occur when you might be the most vulnerable. It could be asking for the sale, taking the shot, putting your words on paper and writing, making a speech in front of a crowd, speaking up when you hear something wrong, apologizing, saying I love you, investing your money, submitting your resume, taking a test. This is the place on the field of play model where the action layer meets the field of play layer. These are those moments where you may be judged by others for your actions, your results, and your response. The common and hidden forces of the enemy stand guard at these moments. If you'd like to get an infographic on the map of how everything works together, go to altereegoeffect.com/resources. French critic Charles Dubois once said, "The important thing is this, to be ready at any moment to sacrifice what we are for what we could become." The truth of life is, no matter how successful you are, no matter the stratospheres you reach, there are times when you still struggle, when you still feel you're underperforming. Everyone, even the world's most elite athletes and most successful business people, struggle somewhere on their playing field. The ones who succeed are the ones willing to look at their game film or data and get honest about how they're showing up. Sometimes you lack the courage to try, and sometimes you lack the courage to admit you've been trying the wrong things. Sean and I took a close look at his past successes and his past failures to see what we could uncover that could make a big difference. Of all your activities, is there one that when you've done it in the past has created more business opportunities for you? I asked. Yeah, when I host lunch and learn sessions at the office and invite prospective accounts and even existing accounts, I'll give them a little presentation about what we're working on, show them the new technology, introduce team members, and answer questions. Awesome. So how many of these lunches did you do last year? I did one. His answer threw me. Seriously? It's your most successful activity and you stopped at one? I prodded. He laughed. Yeah, not the smartest move. No judgment, I said. Obviously, there are reasons why you didn't host more lunches. If you found that one thing that makes a pretty significant difference in your performance and what your boss is judging you on, what stopped you from doing it more? Remember in the last chapter, the 5 bridges to progress? If you look at that previous question, we found a more of bridge. I was trying to uncover what Sean was thinking or feeling about that activity. It's the logistics. Scheduling, getting the space booked, ordering the lunch, getting guest passes approved, and on, he said. I just don't like doing all the administrative stuff. It sounds like you need some help with project management, I said. So he got his technology partner at the company on the phone, and he agreed to help out. We opened up Sean's calendar and scheduled 6 lunch and learn sessions over the next 90 days right there on the spot. Once we cleared that off his plate, we turned to his presentation skills. How do you feel about making presentations? I'm a people person, but presenting to these people is tough. They're the most hard-nosed negotiators in business. The finance world is loaded with superstar negotiation specialists. Give me the spotlight and I'll shine, but I don't feel confident standing in front of my customers. Plus, the presentations corporate gives us are boring and too detailed. They could be so much better. Beyond the confidence issue of being in front of a hard scrabble group of business pros, we dug around more and were able to pinpoint what skills and capabilities he fell short on. In his case, I suggested he read the book Resonate by Nancy Duarte to help build more story-driven presentations. Sometimes you're given tools that aren't optimized for you, so if you can change them, do it. However, sometimes you're just limited to what is being given to you, and that's what your alter ego will help you overcome as well. That's just life. None of us gets every single resource to succeed. However, It's what you do with what you've got that will be the difference in whether you find yourself in an ordinary or extraordinary world. In Sean's case, we needed to change the tools he got, presentations. Then we worked on creating an alter ego who walked in confident, sure of himself, and relaxed, and who saw himself as a formidable and influential presenter. When we started working together, it was near the end of November, and by the end of February, he had hosted 5 lunch and learn meetings, spawning more face-to-face meetings. This not only caused his sales numbers to soar, but he also broke an all-time sales record in February. Traditionally, February is the slowest month in the tech sector. He went from being trapped in his ordinary world to living in an extraordinary world as he rose to the top of global sales and began to be asked by the leaders of the company to share his methods to everyone, which only advanced his career and notoriety even more. He would never have positioned himself to leave the ordinary world behind if he hadn't focused on his moments of impact and identified the precise behaviors and actions he needed to change to get new results. Different moments of impact. My moments of impact are different than yours, just as they are different than Julia's. Julia owns a web and creative agency in Phoenix, Arizona. With a team of 8, her squad is the driving force between interior design, bloggers, and online influencers. By her admission, she'd been struggling to grow her business and to become more visible and dominant in her space. Not because she didn't have the skills, but because something internal was getting in the way. Her moment of impact occurs during client negotiations. "I want to please everyone," she says. "I want to say yes to everything. But then I get myself into a huge heap of trouble because sometimes what I've promised isn't doable on the back end. Or I end up in a cycle where I have to let people down because I overpromised." During her moment of impact, Julia doesn't stand her ground. She doesn't stand up for what she believes or wants. She falls back into people-pleasing, which keeps her stuck underperforming. "I've heard it since my teenage years. And when I started my business, Julia, you're too soft. People are going to walk all over you and you're not going to get anywhere." But as she explained to me, she doesn't believe she's too soft. "I'm incredibly ambitious and determined on the inside, but that's not showing on the outside." Julia is like a lot of people. She has the skills and capabilities. She's been incredibly successful in her chosen path, but it's also been a grind. She's had to fight against some powerful internal obstacles to get to where she is. On her business field of play, when she's negotiating with clients, instead of being strong and assertive in that moment of impact, she kowtows. She's too sweet, too accommodating, and she lets clients walk all over her. She overcommits and overpromises, although deep down, she knows she shouldn't. Her heroic self isn't coming forward, and as a result, her business isn't growing the way she wants it to. She came to me because she wasn't consistently acting like the leader she knew she could be. Recognizing your moment of impact. Your moment of impact comes down to knowing what outcomes you're supposed to create on your field of play. What are the traits, capabilities, skills, attitudes, beliefs, values, and all the other bits and pieces that you need to succeed? Just like Sean and Julia, you have a moment of impact that drove you to grab this audiobook. Something is happening, some behavior and action you're taking or not in your moment of impact that's influencing the results and creating an ordinary world. We have to find not only your moment of impact, but the precise behaviors and actions you're taking or not that are causing you to come up short. Are administrative tasks like Sean's your moment of impact? Probably not. They're responsibilities, but they're not going to catapult your career in unimaginable ways, like, say, delivering a killer presentation in front of your boss. Those tasks were the obstacles to his moments of impact. What you're looking for are those moments that will give you the highest rate of return, or the moments that hold the opportunity to provide you the highest percentage return. You're looking for those moments of impact where you sometimes bring your heroic self, but not nearly enough of the time. If you could show up differently, you'd get a different result. You're not going to concern yourself right now with moments you don't struggle with, even though they might be essential to your success. As I shared earlier in the book, I started using an alter ego in my business life because I was always concerned with what people thought of me. I was so hyper-concerned with my image in other people's eyes that it caused me to be a person I didn't like. Now, I'm entirely indifferent to how I come across when I meet people for the first time. I know that I'll treat people with kindness and respect just because it's the right thing to do, and not because I'm trying to get them to like